Make the choice to begin anywhere in your life, and the journey has started.
We exist more than just to educate. We exist to also revitalize.
And along the way, you can inspire others and be inspired.
But now there's a new generation of scholars, and I am among them.
If you really want to know who you are and what you are capable of, Howard is the choice for you.
Take a moment. Listen to the stories by joining the president of Howard University, Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, and his guest on The Journey.
Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Today, my guest on The Journey is political strategist and former chair for the Democratic National Committee. Lately, we've been getting constant updates on the presidency and the upcoming election process. As a result, many Americans are more motivated to head to the polls and make their voices heard. And Ms. Brazil is someone who will highlight the latest news in politics, but also has a lot of interesting career paths that she's taken to this point that would have given her a very broad view of the state of our politics. So welcome, Ms. Brazil. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm here in the wonderful state of Utah, having watched the amazing performance of Howard University on Kamala Harris. I thought she was terrific. She gave a strong performance. She was on message, not only in addressing the most important issue in this election cycle, and that is the president handling of the pandemic, but more importantly, I thought she was very strong on the economy, infrastructure, and why we need to make a change this fall on Election Day.
And that's where I was going to start. You've written a book for colored girls who have considered politics. And clearly, the epitome of that, or the embodiment of that, is certainly Senator Harris. What about the items that were highlighted in your book you think relate to what you saw in the debate of the vice president candidates that really resonated with you?
Well, I thought the last question was perhaps the most important question. This was a question from a student at the University of Utah, and they wanted to talk about civility in American politics. And I really believe that Senator Harris captured the spirit that most Americans would like our political leaders to now embrace, and that is, we need to be able to talk to one another. We need to have a conversation about these most important issues facing our country. She highlighted the role that government leaders, political leaders, who often hear the call of public service. She articulated what most Americans now believe are in very important consequential issues, the healthcare of our nation. People who have been infected by this virus, and that Dr. Frederick, you know more than anyone else, they now have a pre-existing condition. And what said was that we need to make sure that no American lose their health care. But back to that student question, she encouraged that student to get involved. She encouraged that student to continue to engage and to work with people from the opposite or opposing party, because after all, we're Americans and we share the same values.
Now, you and former Republican National Committee Chair Michael Steele have both been appointed by the Bipartisan Policy Center on their election legitimacy initiative. What exactly is that about, and what are you both hoping to achieve with your participation?
As you know, former Chairman Michael Steele of the Republican Party, the first African-American to hold that position in his party. I'm the first African-American woman to hold my former position in the Democratic Party. Michael Steele and I are working together to ensure that we have a safe, secure election. We believe that this election is vital to the health of our democracy. We want to protect the integrity of our elections. And so we're reaching out to Democratic Secretary of State, Republican Secretaries of State, because as you understand, elections are won on the margins and elections are won on the ground. They're won at the state and local level. So Michael and I are working very closely together to ensure the integrity and security of our upcoming election.
The election process on the surface seems like it should be simple, but it often isn't. The average voter in America faces significant hurdles to voting. Why, for all of the other things that we have progressed in this country, using technology in particular, why can't we move our electoral process along in the same direction?
Well, as you well know, Dr. Frederick, we need a 21st century Voting Rights Act. It is time we provide state and localities the resources to update the voter registration list. This is the reason why Speaker Pelosi, working with a very, very limited amount of support from the Republicans and Mitch McConnell, she's put forward $400 billion to ensure that state and localities have the resources. And in most cases, it's general administrative problems, the glitches that hamper the ability for us to make sure that every citizen get the correct information. We're going to work very vigilantly to ensure that every citizen have the right information, the right tools at their disposal before casting his or her ballot.
So just to switch gears a little bit, the top three topics right now appear to be the COVID-19 pandemic, the economy, and you could argue anywhere between healthcare and the Supreme Court. So let's start first with the Supreme Court, and we'll tie healthcare and the pandemic together. Do you think it is inappropriate for the Republican Party to move ahead with a Supreme Court justice nominee, given the fact that they do have control of the White House and the Senate?
Well, as you well know, in 2016, President Obama put forward, after the sudden death of Justice Scalia, he put forward, after 30 days, the nomination of Judge Merrick Garland. And the Republicans decided that time not to hold hearings, not to give him an opportunity, because they said it was too close to Election Day. Well, back in 2016, there were over 260 days remaining in the election season. We have less than 26 days remaining in this election season. I think the Republicans would be wise and they would be prudent. And of course, they would embrace the principle that they set out in 2016 if they would withhold having a vote before the election. Let the American people decide. And all of the polls agree with Democrats that we should wait until this election before the nominee that has been put forward is voted upon in the United States Senate.
I guess I want to continue with this a little bit, because there's a counter argument to be made that elections do have consequences. And in 2016, when the electorate had an opportunity to pick a president and a Senate, subsequently, they decided to go with the Republican Party, regardless of what one's opinion may be about their performance. So what is your message to young people about the fact that elections do have consequences, and sometimes those consequences may not be consequences that are palatable to them, but that decision has to be made at the ballot box?
It's important that young people understand that they have a role to play. They're the majority of the electorate. I'm a baby boomer. I'm no longer part of the majority of the electorate. They're the majority of the electorate. They have enormous political power that they risk losing if they do not participate in the political process. In a democracy, your voice matters. And the best way to speak about the important issues facing this country, of course, is to go and vote. I also believe it's important to encourage young people to run for office, to participate in the political process. I got involved at the age of 9, and here I am, 10 presidential cycles later. I'm still trying to make a difference by working within the framework of our democracy to ensure that every eligible citizen get an opportunity to cast his or her vote.
And for that, we all remain thankful. The economy. There was a rigorous debate both last week and recently with the vice presidential debate about the tax cuts. What I was surprised not to hear about is the deficit that tax cut has caused. Why all of a sudden the deficit has left our political lexicon in terms of it being an issue around the economy?
Because we're facing one of the greatest economic recessions since the Great Depression, a recession that will likely be much larger and much graver than the last Great Recession that President Barack Obama and Vice President Biden inherited. And so it's very important that we understand the consequences. When the Fed Chairman Jerome Powell went before the Congress and said, we need an additional stimulus. 400,000 businesses have closed. 22 million Americans have lost their health care. And for 28 straight weeks, millions of Americans have filed for unemployment. Some of those jobs will not come back. it's very important that we continue to address the critical needs that the American people are enduring, but also look long-term at how do we rebuild our economy, how do we strengthen it post-pandemic, and how do we build an economy that works for every American. That's why the Vice President has put forward the Build Back Better plan to address some of the deficiencies to ensure that we have a workforce that is up to the 21st century standards. And we know that for a long time, at least in the foreseeable future, we're going to rely on this kind of connectivity. And it's important that we have a broadband plan that can help us in rural communities and urban centers so that every American have access to the kind of technological tools that will enable them to get a decent education and as well as healthcare and so forth and so much more.
The handling of the pandemic has been abysmal at best. And now you have a White House that's a hot spot. You have an event where you could consider it a super spreader event. Where and what is going to be significantly different post-election in the event that we have a change in administration in terms of the approach to the pandemic?
From day one, we understood that we needed a national approach to the pandemic, not a 50-state strategy in the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands acting on their own. We needed a 50-state strategy, a 50-state strategy on testing and on tracing. And now we're going to need a 50-state-plus strategy on ensuring that once we have the appropriate vaccinations ready, that every American will have access, including our essential workers and others. So I think the Democratic plan is going to help strengthen our economy to make sure that we have one plan and to really deal with some of the I call the serious impact of this virus. This virus has taken a toll on communities of color, has taken a toll on women, essential workers. And so we're going to have a lot of work to do, and it's important that we get to it right away.
And as we wrap up, I know there's a lot of focus on Senator Harris and her, obviously, glass ceiling breaking opportunity. But the reality is that you paved the way for Simone Sanders, and who I think the world of, and I think is probably not getting as much attention and credit as she should get, given where the Biden campaign was and what she navigated during the spring to get to this point. Yes, Congressman Clyburn and his impact was important, but she has held on to the reins of that campaign and directed it to a 10-point lead with 20-something days left. She has cited you in past interviews as someone who she regards as a mentor and someone who also provided advice and gave her opportunities when others probably wouldn't. How do you feel as you look at what she has done and the job that she is currently partaking in right now?
I think it's fair to say today, now that the debate is over, that Kamala had within her debate team not only Simone Sanders, but my good friend, my dear friend of 30-plus year, Mignon Moore. So while I wasn't in the room, I knew I was represented by, you know, two remarkable women, two women that not only understood the issues, but understood how a Black woman would have to present those issues. I'm proud of the work that Simone has done, not only on behalf of the Biden campaign, but in representing a new generation of political leaders that will take the reins of power, that will ensure that women of color and other will continue to have a seat at the table. I have to tell you on a personal note, Dr. Frederick, I've had an opportunity to work very closely with the Howard University Student Association, Rachel Howell, her deputy, Michael Franklin, and so many others. I mean, we have so many dynamic young people in our midst today, people who are just ready to be a part of this political process. I'm proud to be associated with Howard University and to bring up this new generation of leaders. So I'm constantly looking for new talent. I'm constantly trying to train and recruit the next generation. And finally, I can tell you my work is paying off. So I'm excited.
Well, we're proud to be associated with you as well. And we're glad that you decided to stay with us for another year as the holder of the Gwendolyn and Colbert King Endowed Chair here at Howard. So appreciate it very much. Thanks for being here. My guest today was Donna Brazile, political strategist and former chair of the Democratic National Committee. She's also the current holder of the Gwendolyn and Colbert King Endowed Chair in Public Policy here at Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.